good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Thursday, the 1st of August, a new month. Yay. Well, a new month. And, you know, I don't have any money on this. I'm not betting. I'm thinking it's going to be hard news-wise to beat July.
Yeah.
I think July is probably going to go down in history.
You know what? I'll take that bet.
You think so?
I'll take that bet.
Yeah, me too. The over-under, I'll take the over.
All right. I mean, an assassination attempt, a change of the ticket, a bad debate. I mean, that's a lot.
We'll see.
All right.
It's a long month. It's got 31
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I'm not going to bet on anything because I just don't know. Any moment is going to change. Who knows? But we are done with July. We're starting August, and we'll see how things go. Let me introduce you to our panel. We have a lot to discuss. It was a busy news day yesterday. It was a busy news day yesterday just after one event. and then a lot of other stuff happened, and we'll get to all of that in just a moment. We are thrilled that the professor of political science at Hartwick College in Oneonta, who studies gender in politics, women political candidates, women voters, and women in elected office. Ding, 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 ding. You win. Laurel Elder is here. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. On my drive down here from Oneonta, I was realizing that it had been 2 months since I'd been on. May 30th was the last time I was on.
You know,
and I was thinking, wow, a few things have happened since then.
I thought the exact same thing when I went back to see when you were last on. And I was like, wow, man, this is are new things to talk about.
Yeah, so, it's like a totally different presidential election.
We'll get into that in a moment. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, is here. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning, Joe, and everyone. Nice to see everybody. Glad to be back.
It's wonderful to have you back.
And I'm willing to hold a counseling session for you after the last 3 games in Philadelphia with the Phillies.
But, oh, my goodness.
Let me know.
I afford to be at home against the Yankees. One, just complete blowout. And then two relatively close games, and just the wind out of the sails after this team has been doing so well before the All-Star break.
Well, Bryce Harper's gone on vacation, apparently.
Apparently, so, yeah. And Schwarber, and well, I don't know, none of them. Well, we'll see. So, thanks for bringing that up. I appreciate it. we have time, of course, to right the ship. I hope. We also welcome our dear friend, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. Hello. How are you?
Good morning. And Laurel is the perfect person to be here today, isn't she?
She really is. We have a lot to discuss. And this is, you know, we talked about this, I believe, yesterday morning, and which was that... You know, Trump has been shaving a little bit because he has been in the news cycle and has been overshadowed by the Kamala Harris explosion on the political scene and the excitement that early days of that campaign seemed to be generating. And we were, I think, in a moment yesterday saying, well, you know, what will change that? Well... How will he get back in the news cycle? Well, yesterday did a pretty good job. I want to talk about that, obviously. I do feel, just to mention this, we do not know a tremendous amount yet. However, Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gersovich and former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan are expected to be released in the biggest prisoner exchange since the end of the Cold War. The deal ends this horrible time that lasted more than 5 years for Whelan and more than a year for Gerskovich. We are still learning details. It's a little unclear as to whether it's about to take place or it has actually taken place yet. And so I'm going to hold off on talking about it at great length because I think that this is obviously something that we want to make sure we have everything right on before we discuss it. But, Judy, let me just quickly go to you, which is obviously having a journalist held hostage, and the apparent release is good news.
That's right, and I want it counted towards my August news coverage when we do the end of the month. But no, this is such great news. It's wonderful news. Evan was arrested as part of Russia's just collecting Americans in terms of trying to get some leverage to get bad people back under their control, people in other countries. My understanding, and again, I think that I am hoping that the U.S. officials are not releasing any information until these people are actually in safe hands, is that this is a multinational exchange of more than two people. I think it can be as many as 13, 14 people in exchange for some, you know, 8 or 9 Russians. And it was something that has been in the works for many, many months. I'm so relieved. I am concerned about, you know, our ability to continue to cover Russia and the reporters still in that country, but doing, you know, the noble work of trying to let us know what's happening in that country. But it's a great day so far. And I usually don't say things like that.
No, you don't. But that's all right. We'll take the. Certainly it is. It's something that we have been watching and talking about for a long time. So that is a good conclusion. Ira, anything you wanted to know?
No, I agree entirely with what Judy said. But obviously, I'm interested to see what the details are, what the small print says, what we had to give up to get these guys back. And I think another thing that may or may not be a factor here is the. Is Biden's current status as a non-candidate, and I wonder if he, if this helps him do sort of the kinds of things he would like to do, but perhaps wasn't going to do because he had to face an electorate. So we'll find out.
Laurel, anything you'd like to add?
I would just echo what my fellow panelists said. I mean, I do think that Joe Biden not running for re-election does give him more time to work on this and other diplomatic issues, and he's really well-versed in this area. I mean, there's very few people who have the foreign policy and the diplomatic knowledge and connections that he does. So if he has a little bit more time now to, you know, invest in these things, he already has a really strong team around him in terms of foreign policy. And, you know, this just shows some of the things he can accomplish in that area in the final months of his presidency.
And when he dropped out of the race, this is what he said he wanted to do. I mean, these are the things that he wanted to accomplish. So we will watch that carefully and see. And hopefully by the end of the program, we'll have a little more information than we do at the moment. All right. So let's talk about yesterday's event in the city of Chicago, where the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, appeared at the National Association of Black Journalists. We'll talk in a minute about the furor and the pushback of that invitation in a moment. But let's, of course, talk about what actually occurred at this event. Trump questioned Vice President Kamala Harris's identity as a black woman on Wednesday in front of an audience of black journalists, suggesting his opponent for the presidency had adopted her racial profile as a way to gain a political advantage. The quote, "She was Indian all the way, and then all of a sudden she made a turn and she became a black person," he said of Ms. Harris, whose mother was Indian American, whose father is black, and who has always identified as a black woman. Ms. Harris has long embraced both her black and South Asian identity. She attended Howard University, a historically black institution. She pledged Alpha Kappa Alpha, the nation's first sorority established for black college women. Headlines from her earliest political victories dating back to the early 2000s highlighted both identities. Mr. Trump's remarks prompted gasps and jeers from the audience of the National Association of Black Journalists in Chicago. The former president's combative appearance there was one of the most unusual of the campaign. And that's saying a lot. So far, as he sparred with reporters over diversity efforts, repeated falsehoods about a range of subjects, and told the group that he was the best president for the black population since Abraham Lincoln. Ms. Harris responded in careful fashion on Wednesday night, saying in a speech in Houston that he had put on the same old show of divisiveness and disrespect, saying that the American people deserve better. Mr. Trump, who has appeared mainly before friendly audiences while campaigning, had ample warning that the panel of journalists awaiting him would be tough, yet facing three black female interviewers, he insulted Ms. Harris, the first black woman on the major party ticket, even as he tried to appeal to black voters as their best choice in November. And he did this, you know, warming up the crowd by denouncing the person introducing him, one of the reporters, Rachel Scott of ABC, calling her nasty and rude after she questioned him about racist statements that he had made in the past, including accusing former President Barack Obama of not being born in the U.S. and describing a black prosecutor as an animal. So he deflected a question about his promise to pardon the rioters who attacked the Capitol on January 6th by saying the Capitol was attacked last week by pro-Palestinian demonstrators. Those protesters did deface buildings and burn an American flag, but they were at the Washington train station, not the Capitol. Laurel, what are we to make of, let's just start with, I think there's a lot there, and we didn't even get into the J.D. Vance stuff that he said yesterday, but which is basically saying you're not voting for him, you're voting for me, and whatever happens with him really doesn't have anything to do with him. But as far as the direct attack on Vice President Harris and her racial identity, what do we do with that?
Well, I was going to echo something you just mentioned, which is that it's been a pretty crazy summer. It's been a pretty crazy presidential election this summer. And yet this appearance of Trump at this conference yesterday still took my breath away. It was bizarre. It was shocking. And yet at the same time, not that surprising, because Trump has done things like this and said things like this before. But I mean, at the most basic level, I was just thinking Trump and his team accepted this invitation. This isn't like he was sitting down for an interview and all of a sudden there was questions about, you know, what are you going to do for black Americans or, you know, your views on race. It's like he accepted an invitation to join the National Association of Black Journalists conference. And the questions he was asked were pretty much the questions you would expect, knowing the audience, if you've been, you know, following Trump's career, if you've been following current events, questions like, you know, why should black Americans vote for you, given some of the things you've said and derogatory comments towards black journalists, black elected officials? What do you plan to do for the black community in the United States? Do you think Kamala Harris is a DEI candidate that's been in the news? These are just, you know, pretty much the basic questions you'd expect to be asked. And yet he didn't seem to have any. He seemed offended by the questions. He didn't seem to have a clear plan about how he was going to answer them. And so I guess that's part of me was like, was this a surprise to him? Did he not have a plan? Or I guess, as some people have been saying, maybe that was the plan, like to show that he was being disrespectful to these black women journalists and to show that he's anti-woke. Maybe that was the plan going in.
Well, a couple of the editorials that I have read over the last 24 hours since this occurred have been that he wasn't speaking to that audience. He was speaking to his audience. And then Chris Sununu, the governor of New Hampshire, making the point, okay, as a Republican governor, saying, okay, but you're speaking to your people. And if you are going to win this, you're going to have to speak to other people. which seems to be a key problem.
Right. That's what puzzled me about this. I think he had to have been prepared. He knew what he was getting into. Three cheers, by the way, to that ABC reporter whose questions were detailed and specific and forceful.
But she didn't say hello first.
Yeah, that made her rude and nasty. She didn't offer him cookies. But and I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
No. I just, as Sununu said, and I hadn't heard that comment, but if he came in there thinking, I'm going to really shore up my own base, and then he succeeded, but this is the beginning of the end of his success of luring in a whole new set of voters who he's going to need to win the election. He's, you know, to go in and take on blacks and black people and the whole thing about Harris's ethnicity. What was he thinking? How often have we said about Trump, what was he thinking? Well, this is one of those what was he thinking moments, because if he didn't know what he was getting into, then that's a whole other difficulty with him.
Judy?
Charlie Sykes on MSNBC this morning referred to him as in the fat Elvis stage of his political career. He's using the same old routine. It's getting boring. It's not that interesting. But, you know, I think he was upset. Kamala Harris has upstaged him every news cycle since Joe Biden dropped out of the race. And he wanted back at the top of the cable news. And he got it. It's true. I also think that some Trump strategists believe he can expand that base, that there are people, racists out there, that don't bother to vote. And if he can motivate them enough by banging this, you know, this same drum again and again and again, he can get them out to vote.
Doesn't he already have them?
No, I think their polling has shown that there are people out there who...
I have to pause you, but we'll come right back right after this.
That her dark hair would weave a snare that I might one day.
Listening to the music of Drank the Gold. It's a duo playing the Upbeat on the Roof concert series at the Tang at Skidmore College in Saratoga tonight at 6 p.m. A New York-based duo, fiddle, guitar, banjo, Irish and American old-time tunes and songs. And we'll be hearing the music of Drank the Gold during this morning's panel coming into our breaks. The playlist is posted online, wamc.org/roundtable. Judy, I unfortunately had to cut you off to go to hear the British people, but anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think I'm just stunned. We'll see what the fallout of this is. I think sometimes we underestimate the racism in this country, and if you're looking at what he said, and you think, well, what's racist about that? You have an issue. These are the kind of challenging her identity is something I've seen murmured on social media since she announced. He did the same thing with Nikki Haley, if you remember. He did something similar to Barack Obama.
Yes. I mean, Obama, of course, was the birth certificate and the whole that went before he even ran for president. But obviously, Laurel, this also is not only racist, but sexist as well.
I think that's true. And I think it shows a misunderstanding or intentional misunderstanding of race and how race has been constructed and legally understood in our country over time. But one thing I also wanted to point to just build off what Judy said about sort of, you know, leaning into grievance. I was also struck by how really Trump right out of the gate was right into the grievances. I mean, he was complaining that the event started late, that their equipment was faulty. He complained that he accepted the invitation under false pretenses. He said he wanted to do it on Zoom and they said he couldn't do it on Zoom. And now they're going to let Kamala Harris do it on Zoom. And he complained about the questions and the questioners. And it just was such a contrast to Kamala Harris the night before. She was in Atlanta, I think it was, and she had this rally and she was, you know, having fun and she was like the happy warrior. And it was just such a contrast. And I do think leaning into grievance politics can motivate some people. I think there is an audience for it, as Judy was saying. But it also made me just think of something. I just listened to this interview with Gretchen Whitmer, who is the governor of Michigan. She was on Ezra Klein's podcast, New York Times podcast. And she was saying that the happy warrior always wins. It's like her debate coach in high school or something told her that. And I was just thinking about it. Kamala Harris was like the happy warrior. She was taking it to Trump, but she was laughing. She was smiling. People were having fun. She was having fun. And then you contrast that to Trump coming out of the gate with just grievance after grievance.
Well, I think you – I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say one happy warrior who didn't win was Hubert Humphrey. And I mean, that was his – literally, that was his nickname, the happy warrior. And he didn't win in 68.
But and of course, a lot of comparisons to 1968 over this election season. But I do think that that you say that even in the vice president's event last night in Houston was the same. It was being covered by many of the cable networks because they were waiting to see if she would respond to the comments that Trump had made earlier in the day. She did indirectly. But again, it was still a very upbeat and positive message overall. Let me just get to some of the letters here. If Trump is speaking only to his base, how is it that he is still running ahead or in a tie with Kamala Harris in the presidential race? It's a good question.
Well, the polls are just now starting to roll out. It's only been a week or so since she moved into the position It's plenty of time for those polls to move. The numbers that I've seen have been dramatically going in the wrong direction for Trump, so I'm not sure the premise of the question is accurate.
Yeah, he's had no erosion in his base, despite his criminal convictions, despite everything, while the Democrats have had erosion in the last 6 months. They're just building it back up. I think his base has held steady, and he's trying to build on it.
Which is why the going after the black journalist in the black audience and et cetera is puzzling because that's an area that he needed to expand into.
Joe, you teach interviewing. So what did you think about the interviews? Were those valid questions or was she being rude?
So let me just I'm going to answer your question, but I just want to point to what Marjorie wrote to us, which I think also keys into this. Why don't we all stop advertising this disgusting person's rants? What to make of him? Someone needs to call him out very directly. Why isn't he confronted immediately? To answer your question, I think the three journalists, confronted him immediately. They confronted him strongly and immediately, and he doesn't stop. He just continues to roll. No, I thought those questions were, as I think Laurel mentioned, completely fair, completely accurate, all true, And were legitimate questions. How do you expect to, much of what Ira is saying, how do you expect to win over black voters when you have said this, and this? So I did not think they were rude. I thought they were all fair questions. I mean, he's notoriously A, thin-skinned, and B, will always attack the press, and lately has really has the thing for ABC. I don't know.
Well, it's being surmised that ABC, which is the next home of the next debate, which he's allegedly looking for a way to get out of, he's now attacking ABC in advance of that debate so that he's getting his first shot in before it even starts.
But Laurel, also just the words of rude and nasty to the reporters, which again seems that not words that he would use to a male reporter, probably.
I think that's right. I mean, I think there's a history of it, and you could just go back and just look at the way he's treated women reporters, women candidates he's been running against, and there's certain language he uses. And you're right, it's the combination of racism and sexism, and we're seeing that again.
I thought in what limited amount of the actual event that I saw versus read about, that Harris Faulkner of Fox offered him a little bit of softer an escape lane.
She did. Yeah.
You know, part of it I was getting from him was this vibe of, how dare you ask me that question? It's like, I am an old white guy, and how dare you?
I am Donald Trump. Yeah. How dare you ask me those questions? Yeah.
That's... But I... Yeah, I was going to add something just about his actual, like, comment about Harris's race, how she presented herself as Indian American, and then, you know, recently she changed her mind and decided she was Black. And it just, it's, I mean, it's sort of a crazy comment, but it also just suggests, like, a lack of understanding of race in America. I mean, as you were mentioning, Kamala Harris, her mother is from India and her father's from Jamaica. And in her biography, she, you know, We the People, I think that's what it was called, she talked about how, you know, her mother raised her. She wanted her to feel connected to her Indian heritage. And she did. But her mother, married to a Black man living in America, involved in the civil rights movement, also knew that American society was going to see her two daughters as Black girls. And she wanted to raise them to be proud Black women. And the point is that for racial and ethnic minorities in the United States, ethnicity and race, it's not optional. There's a, I think she was a Harvard sociologist, Mary Waters. She talks about optional ethnicity. For white Americans, ethnicity is an optional thing and it can be fun. Like on St. Patrick's Day, you can be like, oh yeah, I have Irish heritage and now I'm going to celebrate and drink a lot and this is great. But for racial and ethnic minorities, it's not optional. And she uses the example of like a young Asian American person who is constantly being asked, like, where are you from?
Right.
And you know, if they say Oneonta, New York, that's not going to satisfy the person asking. And so for Kamala Harris, it hasn't been a choice. And so the idea that, you know, that somehow she's choosing between her identities for, you know, to get some type of political gain, it's offensive and it's a misunderstanding. And the other example I think of is, of course, Barack Obama, who had, you know, white mother. I think she was from Kansas. And then his dad was from Kenya, Africa. They met in Hawaii and they had him. And in his autobiography, the one he wrote before he even went into politics, which I thought was great, he grapples with his racial identity. And he was raised by his white mom, his white grandparents. But he realized, particularly as he became a teenager, that society was acting like he was a Black man and that right. He almost had no choice but to – he had to identify as a Black man.
And I realize this is saying a lot, but even in Trump world, the statement of "and then she became Black," wow. I mean that is stupid, but also just is somewhat. I mean, you indicated this earlier, is rather breathtaking.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also the case that recently the U.S. Senate allows people to self-identify in terms of race and ethnicity. But for most of our nation's history, there are actually laws on the books, and the government officials themselves coded what race you were. And if you were, and it varied by states, but if you were 1/8 Black or 1/16 Black, I think in Louisiana it was 1/32 Black, like one great-great-great-grandparent who was Black, you were considered Black because, you know, that's the way, you know, whiteness was defined in a way to advantage and privilege white people in America. And that's, you know, so it's just that whole history is there. It's a very important history. And then to just say, oh, she's choosing what race when it's convenient, it's a big problem.
Ricky writes to us and says, former President Donald Trump's questioning Vice President Harris's Blackness was nauseating to listen to. While it may energize some hardcore white racists to come out and vote for him, I believe it will inspire just as many and probably even more voters to come out and vote for Kamala Harris and against blatant white racism. That is one of the points, Ira, you were making earlier. Jeff writes to us and says, going into this campaign, a worry among Democrats was that it would be difficult to motivate Black voters to go to the polls for Biden. Trump may have cured that yesterday. Then we go to, I think Harris's response to Trump's insane interview is right. Same old story. Keep emphasizing that he has no ideas, that he is old. He sounded like the old uncle at the dinner table who didn't know it was 2024. Does he really not understand what it is to be biracial? Nevertheless, he's playing the same hits to his base with no new ideas or even new insults. Harris needs to keep up that messaging that he's old and living in the past and she is the future.
You know, I don't think he understands or knows what DEI is. When he was asked that question, he said, define it. And then she...
I heard that. I was surprised because I can't believe he doesn't know what to
do. I think he doesn't know. I think that this is... He's skated over his head and he hasn't paid attention to this, despite the fact that everybody in his party is talking about it. He asked her to define it and she said, this is what it means. And he says, well, define it. And she said, I just did. I mean, he could not answer the question.
No, and then he said it may be, I don't know, and it could be, people tell me.
Some people say that line
that is used. One more letter, and then we'll go to a break. June says, when will we ever learn? This is what Trump wants us to do, which is to give any type of attention to him, bad and ugly. We need to totally ignore him until November. The press should only write about our first Madam President. I might add, this alone will cure most of our depression. But I mean, you got to write about that. I mean, that is, I think, what happened yesterday was
he needed to get his name in the top of the news cycle, and that apparently, if you believe that he prepared everything he was going to say yesterday in advance, then he succeeded in getting at the top of the cycle, but I don't think he anticipated how negative that would be received. So in that case, he got what he wished for, but not for the right reasons.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome you, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Ira Fussfeld, Judy Patrick, Laurel Elder, and we welcome you. panel@wamc.org. We'll return right after this. We have to stop talking about World War II.
Do we?
No, we don't really. No, you're right. You know what? I bet if we had an entire segment on Wordle on this show, it would be extremely popular.
Well, don't say the day's word.
No, I won't.
Everyone could share their go-to first word.
Well,
would be fun.
It would be fun. I will tell you that I am one of the outliers, I think. I do it right before bed.
That's usually when I do it too.
So it's different. For me, it's like the Olympics now, of just trying to keep from knowing what the results are before you watch them at night, and it's hard.
It's a good thing you don't live with me.
Yeah. all right. Chad writes, imagine going on stage in front of a room of black journalists on TV and saying the stuff he said. He has no clue that the world doesn't like him. Well, I mean, there's a large percentage of people who do and like him enough, at least, that they will vote for him. The worst thing the misogynist and racist ex-liar-in-chief could have imagined is being challenged and very possibly defeated by a mixed-race woman, in shouty caps, Paul writes to us.
Can you imagine the debate? I just can't wait. I think
if it happens, right?
If it happens, I think he can not do it. I think he has to debate her, and I think she's going to be ready, and it's going to be a wonderful example of debate strategy.
Peter writes to us and says, if you want to know why Donald Trump supporters feel the way they do, all you need to do is right now look at Fox News' website and Facebook page. Their front page has nothing about Trump's comments. They don't even tell their viewers about Trump and the bad things that he does.
And there's some criticism from Fox personalities about the nature of the questions. That's one of the reasons I was interested in what your take on it, Joe, that some people are criticizing the questions as rude. They weren't rude. What they were doing was offering context, saying, you said this in the past, you know, and bringing his past directly to him and then putting it in context and asking him a relevant questions. They weren't softball questions.
I don't know how you ask somebody nicely if you're a racist, you know, or how to, you said this, great tie, but you also have said these horrible things. I mean, just by the nature of doing it, it's going to be antagonistic or could be perceived that way, although again it would be if the statements weren't true, if they weren't actual quotes and actual things that were said and done during his administration and throughout his political career.
I mean, he wasn't bluntly asked, "Are you a racist?" That might have been rude.
Right.
What he did, what they did was they put it in context and say, well, these things seem to indicate that maybe black people will not like to vote for you. Maybe he should have been asked, "Do you really want the votes of black people?" I mean, maybe you would have gotten a different answer.
I don't think it would have been rude to say flat out, "Are you a racist?" It's a tough question, and he's running for the president of the United States, and he has a history of issues with black people and minority people, and let him answer it.
I've never known a racist to recognize that they are a racist.
Well, let's find out what he thinks. I mean, that goes back to the—
Well, and I think that's what the questions were trying to ascertain. If I had any complaint, two complaints. One is that in the press coverage, I don't think they allowed they were using Trump's clips and they weren't allowing they were cutting out the questions and the responses from the journalists, which I think kind of it took it out of a context that I do believe was necessary. My only, and it's not a complaint, I understand it because of the way he answers questions, but she— all three journalists did this, but especially the first journalist. It was just a torrent of questions. I mean, it was just a boom, 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 boom. And, you know, after a while, it's like, okay, which one am I answering? It doesn't, but it didn't matter, because if you didn't get it out, it wasn't gonna matter. The answer would have been probably the same regardless. We have this from Barbara, who says, "There's so many things I don't understand. First of all, why are people constantly surprised by Trump's racist and derogatory comments?" I don't think we're surprised, but I think accepting the invitation of a Society of Black Journalists, number one. Okay. Two, saying that somebody just created their race, I still think that it is for someone who is the currently a front runner is still news. But I understand the point, Barbara. Second, why are we constantly convinced that anything new he says or does will be the one thing that will finally bring him down? Third, why does the press constantly use accusatory questions intended to entrap him? He is perfectly capable of building his own trap.
I don't think the questions are legitimately strong, detailed questions backed up by facts, and he is running for president of the United States. And anybody in that chair, I would like to think that Harris, when she's sitting in that chair, would be asked similarly difficult questions. That's what the press's job is.
Yeah, there are tricky ways to ask a question. I don't think these were tricky ways. An example of a tricky question: when did you stop beating your wife? That's a tricky question.
Right.
But these were, again, in context and done, and they tried to follow up, and they tried— What reporters are so often trying to do is nail someone down to get a real answer to the question asked. And politicians are very adept at not asking or not answering the question asked. I mean, it's frustrating. And people at home watching this are saying, why are you hammering the person with so many of the same questions? It's because you're not getting the answers to the real question.
But I think this event, I mean, in many ways achieved its goals, like to put Donald Trump on the record. What are his views on race in America? What are his views on racial issues? What are his views about his opponent, Kamala Harris? And I think it was very revealing in that way. So I think whether he answered the questions directly or indirectly, like, he gave us a real insight into what he thinks about these issues, and then that allows voters to decide what they want. And to a couple of the people who've written in, like, you know, why are people acting like this is going to change things? And I don't think it will, and because there's been so many events like this. And also, I think this election, even though Kamala Harris right now is riding momentum and she's got her honeymoon and her press coverage is very positive and lots of people are feeling very good about it, this is going to be an incredibly close election. Yeah, it may be turnout, like we were saying before, is what will make the difference. I don't think we're convincing anyone to switch parties at this point.
We only have a minute before we have to go over to the news, but Let me just ask this question. It was something we touched on yesterday. But don't you think, I'm going to lead the witnesses here. But don't you think we were talking about this yesterday, and all agreed that this truncated time for the Harris campaign could very much be a benefit to that campaign, and the fact that it is you're not campaigning for 2-3 years. You've got it in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, she's got momentum right now, and then she's going to make her vice presidential nomination pick
soon. More momentum.
And more momentum. I mean, the people she's considering. And then the convention. So, right. So then you just have September and October, and as we've seen, a lot can happen in 2 months.
Yes, a lot can happen in 2 months. We'll take a break. And we'll have a little palate cleanser that we like to call News with Ray Graff.
Oh.
And
oh.
And did that come off as a derogatory?
No, yeah. Not at all.
Ray doesn't know quite what to make of it. I don't think I know it. I don't think I know what it means. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. And we have a good one going with a wonderful group. So let me reintroduce them to you, and then we'll move on to new topics, slightly new topics, I would say. Professor of Political Science at Hartwick College in Oneonta, who studies gender and politics, women political candidates, women voters, and women in elected office, Laurel Elder is here. Hello, Laurel. Publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Ira Fussfeld, and vice president for editorial development at the New York Press Association, Judy Patrick. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. So right after at the conclusion of this program, two of our three panelists will go into a studio next door and engage in a taping of the media project. I am going to try to have this as a
bridge,
a warm up.
That's exactly what that was the word I was searching for—a warm up to that, which is the question of while we've been discussing the NAJB invitation to Donald Trump, we've been talking about the event that occurred yesterday. But black journalists are responding to the disastrous, their words, Trump panel at the annual convention, and many express frustration with the association for inviting the ex-president, they say, into, quote, our home. I'm interested in the views of all of you, of course, but especially from the two journalists as to what you make of this. Judy, let's start with you.
So many black journalists thought this was a bad idea. Some people refused to attend and voiced their objections. Others said, why wouldn't we interview the leading candidate for president if given the opportunity? Others would argue that, well, this is not meant to be a news-making event. It's supposed to be a conference where we get together and more like a reunion of sorts. It ended up being a very newsy event. It ended up showcasing why this was a good opportunity to invite him to answer some hard questions. I was surprised at the debate about even inviting him. But the notion here is, why should we give him a platform? And this is something media companies are dealing with all over the place. Should we interview him? We talked about if he walked in the door here at WAMC, would we invite him around the roundtable? Certainly we would. So giving him a platform is what we need to do, because it allows us to see where his mind is going.
Where it is and where it isn't. Right.
Yeah, I mean, the way yesterday turned out, when all ways you can dissect how it came out from whatever your point of view is exactly why it was correct to have him there. He came, he exposed himself, for good or bad, to the organization and to the country. He was faced with questions. Again, I keep saying, as the president or running for president of the United States, you have an opportunity to bring him into your home. As they said, you take advantage of it. And hopefully he'll bring donuts, but, you know, not every day he does that. I was a little surprised. Now, Judy just injected something that I was not aware of, is that when you say to me they're having their conference or convention, typically with national organizations such as that, they include visits by politicians. And it sounds to me like that is historically not what happens at this thing. It's more of a workshop kind of a production. If in fact that's the case, well, I guess I can see why they might not want to have it change their format. But at the end of the day, you bring him in to speak to journalists, to expose him and to answer questions, and that's perfectly appropriate.
I think at any journalism conference, they love to get the newsmakers in. I mean, even
right.
at publishers, yep. New York Publishers or New York Press Association, we would love to have big newsmakers in.
I remember when I was a member of the Association of ASNE, I don't even remember how it, but it was an editors.
Newspaper Editors Association,
yeah.
I think.
And they have their convention in Washington, and I made a few of those over the years. And one year, Nixon was one of the keynote speakers. And I was thinking when I saw his name on the program, I don't want to see this. This is the guy who I hated when I was in college. And I was just, he was fascinating. He didn't change my mind on any kind of ideological bent, but he was fascinating to listen to. And I actually found myself at the end wandering up to the gaggle and listening in a small group to hear him talk. It was just tremendous exposure, and that's what these conferences often are.
Moral, anything like that?
I would just say that I agree that I think it was a good opportunity for these journalists. I mean, if you have the opportunity to talk to the person who basically is the leader of the Republican Party right now, the leading presidential candidate, it's good to take that opportunity. At the very beginning of the event, the person introducing it had said that they had interviewed former presidents and former presidential candidates before. Not all of them, but some of them. So it did seem like there was a tradition here. And I also think it was an opportunity for Black journalists to be the ones asking questions about what Donald Trump was going to do or what his plans were for the Black community. So rather than having Jake Tapper or Dana Bash ask these questions, and they're great journalists too, but, you know, to have the Black journalists themselves being the ones to put these questions to Donald Trump, I think there's something powerful about that as well.
Abby, Philip, Philip or Phillips? I think it's Philip, singular, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Abby Philip of CNN was on Jay Tapper's program yesterday and saying, you know, as a Black journalist who has been called stupid and dumb and idiotic by Donald Trump and has taken all kinds of abuse, that she felt it was essential not only for Black journalists to have it, quote, in their house, and invite him in, but also to have the Black journalists have an opportunity to ask the questions that they've wanted to ask for a long time. And I thought that was a good perspective.
I'll tell you who must have been thrilled
with it
was April Ryan, who is a veteran Black reporter and covers the White House forever, and who was the subject of Trump's vitriol during any number of press events during his term in office. And she must have been thrilled to see the way he had to squirm yesterday.
All right, let's go to another topic. And we welcome your letters, as always, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. We move on again slightly. We go to White Dudes for Harris. I'm sorry, I just think that's a funny name. The platform, formerly Twitter, now X, suspended White Dudes for Harris account after a massive fundraiser. The account was reinstated, but the issue sparked concerns about how Elon Musk could use X to sway voters, even as Republicans welcome his influence. Elon Musk's social media platform X suspended white dudes for Harris Monday night, shortly after a massive fundraising call where almost 200,000 people helped raise more than $4 million for the vice president and presumptive Democratic nominee. The account, at Dudes for Harris, was reinstated Tuesday morning after it was blocked hours before because of a user report for, quote, violating our rules against evading suspension. According to a screenshot shared with the Washington Post, organizer Ross Morales Ricchetto said that the group submitted a complaint to X but had no other direct communication from the platform. We hosted the event, and it was wholesome and a bunch of dudes being earnest, getting inspired and excited, Ricchetto said in an interview with the Post. And suddenly we realized the X account had been suspended, and we had no idea why. White Dudes for Harris said, thank you for an awesome evening. 150,000 people have joined the cause. 190,000 people tuned in tonight. $4 million plus raised for the Kamala Harris campaign. This is the start of something special, and we couldn't be more proud to be in this fight with you. More to come. White Dudes for Harris has no affiliation with the Harris campaign, but was created to energize voters, in this case, white men, for Vice President Harris. It is a string of identity-focused groups such as Black Women for Harris and White Women for Harris, which have been holding calls and fundraisers in earnest since President Biden dropped out of the race. So, two issues here. One, of course, is this the self-identifying as a white male, a white dude, voting for Harris, or a Black woman or a white woman voting for Harris, and also the issue of the social media platforms and how it is allowing those to be used for fundraising, and the fact that those accounts can be quickly pulled.
Well, I'll just say, I mean, I agree. I think the name White Dudes for Harris is funny and fun, and I think it's intentionally so. And I think it sort of captures this sort of lighter, more fun atmosphere that the Harris campaign has going on right now, with like the coconut memes and the Harris's brat, you know, reference to Charlie XCX, the singer, and just the fun, the dancing, things like that. So I think it's funny, and I think it's supposed to be, but I also think it's addressing a real issue, which is something that I do have looked at in my research, which is the gendering of the two parties. I think most people are familiar with the gender gap and the fact that since 1980, we see a gap somewhere between 6 and 12 percentage points between the preference of women and men in terms of who they vote for. Now, there's some misunderstandings about the gender gap. Like, for example, in 1984, a majority of women actually voted for Reagan, the Republican. But it's just that even more men voted for Reagan. So there still was a gender gap. And also, when people talk about the gender gap, they often talk about women, but it's actually men's changing behavior that caused the gender gap. Men left the Democratic Party, and that's really what created the gender gap. But I think, you know, the Democratic Party is more diverse in terms of its voters and in terms of its elected officials. There's a lot more women who are Democrats in elected office than women Republicans. And so I think it is sort of important that Democrats make it clear, yes, there's still a place in our party for white men. And so I think this group is trying to make that claim. And I think this ties directly to the conversation we're having about who Kamala Harris's vice president will be, because I'm pretty sure it's all white dudes on that list.
Yes. Gretchen Whitmer was the only major name, I would say the most talked about name on the list. And she has said she is withdrawing her name from possibility. So, yes, that leaves the white male buffet, as Jake Tapper called it on the, on the lead yesterday.
You know, I found it especially troubling that Twitter disabled this account, on, and in classic social media form, gave no real reason for what they do. This is the problem with social media companies. They're not transparent. We don't know how they act, what the rules are, but they seem to arbitrarily have blocked this account. And since Elon Musk has been very clear that he endorses the Republican former President Donald Trump, it's hard to not believe that this wasn't a calculation. And going forward, I think the social media companies, at the very least, have to be more forthcoming about what they do, why they do it, and what their rules are, because we're all flying blind when it comes to what we post on social media and why we get blocked or why things happen. It's a mystery, and then accounts get reinstated. We still don't really know why. I have not seen a good response from Twitter yet, or X, even though they're talking about going back to Twitter, I hear, about why they did what they did. So transparency in social media seems to be non-existent.
So can I ask a question? I guess I can.
You had rude.
That's
don't
what
be
you
rude
do.
Sort of be in the job description. One of the things that crossed my mind about this as I was reading this article of why use Twitter, like why use X. It was something that was brought up when President Biden made the announcement that he was withdrawing from the race, that he did it on X. And there was a point where a lot of especially left-leaning folk said, we're done with this. Obviously, this is an Elon Musk production. He has thrown his support behind Trump. There are all of the questions as to what Judy just mentioned as far as the algorithms and so forth, that why they would do it in the first place, especially when there are other platforms. There is Instagram. There is Meta. Zoom, for goodness sakes. I mean, there are a lot of different ways, of course, Facebook, a lot of different ways to go about it. And that was the thing that came to my mind immediately.
Oh, I was going to say something similar to that. I'm disappointed to hear that X is still the go-to place for any number of things. When I was on Twitter, I enjoyed following Twitter. It was a good place to follow breaking news. I contributed once in a while, nothing earth-shattering. But when Elon Musk took it over and started to do what he was doing with it, I dropped out. So I have not been on that platform for, I don't know, is it years or months at least? That said, I don't have any problem with him as the owner of that platform deciding what is and isn't going to be on it. It's, after all, it's his platform. It's like somebody coming up to me at a newspaper I run and say, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, yes, I can. But there are consequences depending on what it is you decide to do. And that's why I go back to, and as Joe pointed out, there was a period where it seemed like many people were getting out of Twitter knee X. And I guess that has slowed up because it's still a place mm-hmm. for the President of the United States to announce that he's not going to run anymore.
You know, it essentially serves as an AP news feed for a lot of people. If you put it on.
Still?
Yeah, I mean, that's how clearly President Biden thought that was a good way to get the information out. And in fact, it worked. Within 30 seconds, maybe within 15 seconds, that news spread like wildfire. Maybe it's that white dudes are on Twitter, although it's hard to believe. I mean, what social media platform would this group of people be on? I don't think they're going to be on. Well, I mean, I don't want to generalize, but I bet they're not on TikTok. Maybe
well, Threads they are. Threads was supposed to be the successor.
Yeah, Threads,
but it never really has not yet picked up steam.
No, and I don't. Ira, I go to you because I know you are a TikTok user, but they can do live events there, right?
Yeah, like quite often.
Yeah,
I'm entertained by TikTok. I don't, but I'm careful about it. You got to mm-hmm. watch what is real and what isn't real. But I find it entertaining.
Well, I just think I would add the suspension of this account to a very long, long, long list of things we need to be concerned about relating to social media overall and social media as a source of news in particular. I mean, we are all addicted to our devices. We spend hours and hours and hours a day on our devices. And so whatever these news media companies or the companies that own the social media platforms, you know, want us to see or don't want us to see, they have a lot of power about what we end up talking about, what we end up thinking about, and what we see. And, I mean, this is a concern with TikTok. This is a concern with X. So it's just they have enormous power over what we understand to be happening in the world and our news as well. And so more concerning than anything, you know, Elon Musk is thinking in particular, it's just that all these companies who own the social media that we spend so much time on, their concern is not like, oh, let's create algorithms so that we can create an informed public and so that people can get the news that they need to carry out their roles as citizens. They're like, how can we get people to spend more time on our platform so we can make more money? And so that's really the big concern.
Well, my concern in addition to that is that many people simply are not critical enough users of these platforms to know what is just garbage, what is flat out untrue, and what is true. And if you're not reading carefully, it answers in part the question, why do so many people like Trump? Because they believe what they're reading on these platforms, and it's often just made up out of whole cloth. Or you know, use something, it's serious to the people involved. On TikTok recently, people have been posting RIP, and then they'd run a picture of a celebrity who allegedly had died. And I said, oh, isn't that something? Well, it turns out he hasn't died. And they've been, I don't know what it is about people who feel this will be fun. Let's put up somebody and say they just died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is
someone
the...
did that with me, I'd just go with it.
Just well,
cash out your incentive.
Yeah,
wait right. for the eulogies to
That's
come.
That's right. Just kind of watch.
And the number, I mean, I teach at a college, and the number of students today who do not subscribe to any news source that actually engages in, you know, journalism, verification, has an editor, you know, editor gets, you know, all this, they are getting almost all their news, I mean, from social media.
But also in the students that I talk to and teach, it also seem when we say news, it's like they're not telling you about a Biden dropping out or even a Trump assassination attempt. It's you get things like, did you hear they're discontinuing Dr. Pepper? and like that, and that, well, I mean, that is considered news. It's fake, but it is considered to be news. Mm-hmm. And it's more of on a periphery, but to say, and I agree with you, I mean, yeah. To say that that's where they, if you ask them where they get their news, that's where they get their news, but it's what the news is. And these seismic things that are happening are often overlooked because we control what we want to be a part of, what we want to know and what we care about.
Yeah, no, I think it's something I think about a lot. I think I've mentioned on this show before, I'm also the co-director of the Hartwick Institute of Public Service. And one of the things is just how do we get young people more engaged in our democracy and inspire a new generation of public servants? And one thing we're trying to do is just get really easy access, free on their phone access to the news for, you know,
right.
young people, because they're not going to pay for it. They're not going to pay $120 or $240 a year, and they need it on their phones. So we're like, let's do it. So at least they have, you know, that option. So something other than social media as a way to find out what's happening in the world.
I did that in one of my classes. We got them New York Times subscription. We put them up for notifications, and they all just did Wordle. We'll be back right after this. Finish up First News. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. A couple of letters on the topics we've been discussing this morning I would like to get to as we finish up for this Thursday morning on gotta check this Thursday morning on this first day of August. We go to Karen. As a local unknown author, I joined Twitter a number of years ago to build my platform. When Musk took it over and turned it to X, I weighed the possibility of leaving. But as an unknown, I was reluctant to abandon the platform I built there. Now I've decided to stay and make my voice heard. Yes, it's a drop in the ocean, but it's my drop, damn it. And that is from Karen, which makes sense. Like, I understand that rationale. Charles writes, there's a point when someone gets so out of line in public, so disgustingly inappropriate, that they should be told to leave. His mic should have been shut down as he was informed to leave during his tirade yesterday in Chicago. That from Charles. Well, it was turned off. It was just turned off by his people. Not
right.
The other.
It was supposed to be an hour-long interview, and it ended up being 34 minutes. He got the hook by his own people, apparently, and taken off the stage.
By the way, I just want to go back to something that we mentioned at the top of the show. The Wall Street Journal reporter and others were freed in a prisoner swap in Turkey in the most far-reaching exchange between Russia and the West in decades. As of 10:32, this multi-country prisoner swap in Turkey on Thursday freed the Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich and at least one other American held in Russia, along with a leading Russian dissident, in the most far-reaching exchange between Russia and the West in decades, according to a statement by a Turkish security official. It was also shared by the government media office. The exchange took place at an airport in Ankara, Turkey, and involved 24 adults who had been imprisoned in 7 different countries, The official said. In addition to Mr. Gershkovich, the prisoners freed by Russia included Paul Whelan, a former U.S. Marine arrested in 2018. The prisoners freed by the West include Vadim Krasikov, a convicted Russian assassin, according to the Turkish officials. The deal seemed sure to prompt jubilation among Western nations that had condemned the charges against Mr. Gershkovich and others as baseless and politically motivated. So that is according to the New York Times as of just...
Well, I don't mean this sarcastically, but I can see about a year from now Joe Donahue interviewing Gershkovich as he makes his book tour.
And I look forward to that.
Yeah,
I hope so.
It sends chills down my spine to hear that news. And again, it always amazed me that the Rupert Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal, the Wall Street Journal, reporter for the Wall Street Journal, has been held in captivity for doing his job for more than a year in Russia. And, you know, there was a tremendous amount of media pressure, but it didn't really do the trick. You know, it just shows you that, you know, the media can be a powerful entity, but in this case, it did not work. They, you know, we saw editorials. We saw, a full-on campaign to raise awareness about the injustice being done here to Evan as well, to all the other prisoners. I mean, I'm anxious to see, you know, everyone who was involved in this and see what happens going forward. Again, we still want journalists to be able to function in Russia without right. fear of being hauled away to the gulag. So it's still concerning. We still don't have assurances from the Putin government that they are going to treat our journalists with respect.
Let's go to a couple of other letters on other subjects, mostly about Trump. Josh says Trump is going to dig his own political grave with this kind of stuff. Happy to let him do it. But will the Democrats admit that Harris is already, all issues considered, well left of center? Or will they fight with her and try to push her further left? That will decide this race, I think. Laurel, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think, Harris faces, like I said, she's sort of in the honeymoon phase, and she's going to face a number of challenges. She's going to, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how she does when she sits down. We were talking about this during a break, during an interview when she's, you know, she can give a great speech. Is she going to be able to answer questions and keep that same sort of positive attitude and not, I've seen her before get defensive, and I think that she's sort of at her worst when she's defensive. So I'll be interested to see how she does in that. I mean, people are going to look at her record. They're going to, you know, try to paint her as a San Francisco liberal. And when she ran for the Democratic nomination for president in 2020, I mean, she actually dropped out, I think, in late 2019. But she did adopt positions that were to the left of Joe Biden. I mean, but now I do think she's basically running as a continuation of the Biden administration. So, I mean, I think she's not necessarily far to the left of Biden. So, but I think she will need to be able to articulate that.
Where do you think Bobby Kennedy lands now?
Well, I've been thinking about, because I also, for one of the classes I'm teaching this fall is about parties and elections, and we're reading a book about third parties, and it's actually called The Two-Party Doom Loop. So the author sort of tips his hands. He thinks our two-party system is one of the reasons for a lot of the problems we have in American government. And I think that Kamala Harris's presence on the stage really takes the wind out of his sail. And I think we're going to see the support for all the third party candidates. I mean, he was the only one that was really getting traction, yeah. But I think we're going to see that go down.
You also, you keep hearing, and I don't know how accurate this is, back to that X thing, that there has been correspondence between the Trump campaign and the Kennedy campaign of some sort of deal or endorsement or something. And it'd be interesting to see what that.
With Kennedy endorsing Trump? Boy, I don't see that.
I don't either, or maybe just shutting up. I don't know.
There is a poll out today. It's just one poll, but it does show Kennedy's support waning and that those voters going to Harris. Not so much that Trump had lost any of them, but that they are going to Harris.
Go to this letter from Margot. I attended the fundraiser for Kamala Harris on Saturday, and this was the fundraiser at the Colonial Theater in Pittsfield. It was a brilliant, joyous event. Take it from there to Trump's appearance at the National Association of Black Journalists event. I agree that Trump probably does not know what DEI stands for. His comments were an unwelcome flashback to his debate with Clinton in 2016. Nasty question, indeed. Those ladies nailed him unlike any other interview that I have heard. I can't wait for the spectacle of the Trump-Harris debate. Does that happen, do you think?
I think, particularly given the groundwork that he laid yesterday by knocking ABC, that he wants out of that ABC debate. And the only way there'll be a debate if it's on Fox.
I don't know. I think she is this new call of say it to my face. You know, this is what Harris was saying last night. She said, you know, if you're going to criticize it, say it to my face, and calling him out for being afraid to say it to her face. And I think eventually he's not going to let that stand. It's just the male ego. Sorry, guys, but it's the male ego is going to rise up in him, and he's going to say, okay, I'll do it. And despite what his campaign advisors will tell him, he'll go on that debate stage.
How about the narcissistic ego?
Yeah, right. All right. Okay. All right. Sorry.
Just saying. Andrew says the reason that this is news is because it's important for us to be reintroduced to Donald Trump as a candidate because so many people have specifically forgotten about who he is. This was especially said during the Republican National Convention of Trump amnesia. And one of the things that was mentioned after his very lengthy speech at the RNC that this reminded people, oh, right, that's what that was like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, he said he was going to rewrite his speech at the convention, but all he did was he kept the same speech, but in the first 20 minutes he talked about the assassination attempt. I think that's all he did. That's why it was so long. 90 minutes at least?
Yeah, 93 minutes. And also, he did say that he would never tell those stories again about about the assassination.
But he does it at every stop.
He does it at every stop, yeah. Which, I mean, that's his story to tell, and certainly, I mean, it's a hell of a story. There's no question about it. Anyway, let's and I think that is all I have. We have about 2 minutes, so let's end with liverwurst.
Oh, we need a palate cleanser.
Right? We need a palate cleanser. Joe, why are you doing a story about liverwurst? Because I knew Ira was going to be on the panel.
But I don't like liverwurst. I like a lot of the other stuff. But
Boar's Head, and I swear this happened to me, but we went, Kelly and I went away for a few days, and we were staying at a place with a kitchenette, and we went to the deli, and we got only 4 or 5 packages of Boar's Head deli meat, and then we went back to the hotel, and then I started to read the news about it. I was like, damn it. Cold cuts linked to a nationwide listeria outbreak have vanished from bodega and deli counters across New York City. For some shops, business is down because there is a liverwurst shortage. For Jimmy Estevez, the owner of Jimmy's Deli on Staten Island, the truck came twice, once last week, again on Tuesday, when Boar's Head expanded a list of recalled meats. The men from the truck looked at its meat case, scanning barcodes and examining labels. They carted away ham, salami, and bologna. Then they asked for the liverwurst. Liverwurst, he said? I don't sell it. The recall, initially issued on July 25th over concerns of tainted liverwurst and now affecting 7 million pounds of meat, was felt intimately in the city, where bodegas are ubiquitous and Boar's Head is the cold cut of choice. Now, what do we do?
I did my weekly shopping. I do the shopping for my wife and I because I'm the only one who eats anything. But my favorite place, the deli, was completely closed because they're cleaning up, just in case.
All right. Well, we end on that sad news. My thanks to everyone for being with us. You're all wonderful.
Thank you, Joe.
Be well. We'll be back right after this.